We are going to recap what's been going on in the last 4 days with our weekend review. The Liberal and NDP coalition, yes, it's official. They are now going steady. They passed Bill C-11, an internet censorship bill, through the House of Commons without debate. And we will examine newly released data that is being touted as proof that the Toronto police are racist and show disproportionate force to black people. It is June 21st. Pride comes before the fall month is almost over. I'm Andrew DiBartolo. That's Matt Halleck. And this is the Liberty Dispatch.
Welcome to the Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. Whether you watch us or listen via podcast, we just ask that you would interact with our content, that you would like, subscribe, rate, and review, and share it with your friends who need to be weaned off of CBC and CTV and put on to some great new news broadcasting from a Christian perspective. Also, you can get us on the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network, which has its own app, which you can download from the Google Play and the Apple App Store. So be sure to do that so you can get our content on demand, all three shows. Also, be sure to go over to our website, check out all things Liberty Coalition Canada at libertycoalitioncanada.com. Subscribe to our email list while you're over there, and also be sure to leave a donation. We really appreciate that. And as always, please send comments, questions, and feedback to info@libertycoalitioncanada.com, or you can just leave us comments below. We love to hear from you.
I want to take a moment to tell you about my friends at RockLink Investment Partners. The team at RockLink doesn't invest your money to satisfy a woke ESG goal or fall in line with the World Economic Forum. They invest in great businesses that will protect and grow your wealth the old-fashioned way. So get out of mainstream money and connect with the freedom lovers over at RockLink. You can call them at 905-631-5462. Again, that's 905-631-5462. Or you can send them an email at info@rocklink.com. That's Rock, R-O-C-K-L-I-N-C, link with the C. That's info@rocklink.com. I plan on heading over to RockLink toward the end of the month to move over some of my RSPs and invest with them personally. And so if you want someone who shares your worldview and your understanding of all things freedom and liberty, you need to connect with our friends at RockLink Investment Partners.
Absolutely. And Andrew, it feels as though the news cycle is really hard to keep up with these days, with the acceleration of how news is coming at us from all different angles. So we thought it would be wise to do what we are going to call our weekend review. Cue it up. So let's start by checking in on our noble, benevolent public health overlords.
Top U.S. infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci, arguably the most prominent face of the government's efforts to contain the coronavirus pandemic, has tested positive for COVID-19. The National Institutes of Health said Fauci, who is chief medical advisor to President Joe Biden and the longtime director of the NIH, was experiencing mild symptoms and will self-isolate and continue to work from home. Fauci, who is 81, is fully vaccinated and twice boosted. And earlier this week, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, fresh off a meeting with Biden at the Summit of the Americas, said that he had come down with COVID for the second time this year.
Canada did quite well with our vaccine coverage, but many more people do need to get their boosters to get up to date. So that is really important. As to whether mandates are the tools to get people there, that is something that policymakers will have to decide on. Just because someone doesn't require it doesn't mean you shouldn't get up to date. So it is still important. We just talked about the fact that virus activity could go up and down. I think there'll be a significant campaign to get more people vaccinated as we head into the end of the summer into the fall season. So we'll see what happens with that and what happens to the virus activity.
While these public health officials continue to push a failed gene therapy on the population, it turns out the producers of that failed gene therapy admit to fraud concerning their data in open court.
So I represent Brooke Jackson, who is a whistleblower who exposed that the Pfizer clinical trials were riddled not only with error, but with fraudulent and false certifications to the U.S. government. That's the allegation of the suit.
Allegedly.
Yes. she's got a lot of evidence of it. But what's fascinating is Pfizer has moved to dismiss the case, and their grounds to dismiss, as they repeated in the scheduling conference we had this week, is that it doesn't matter if they submitted fraudulent certifications to the government. It doesn't matter if they submitted false statements under penalty of perjury to the government. It doesn't matter if they lied about the safety and efficacy of these drugs, mislabeled, in my opinion, as vaccines. Because the government was in on it with them. The government knows what's going on, and the government still would have given them the check anyway. So is it really fraud if the government's their co-conspirator?
And finally, it appears that social engineering is actually more important to our public health administration and establishment than, you know, public health.
Dinner with a purpose. Dozens fill a Toronto restaurant for a meal prepared by HIV-positive chefs. A night to bust the stigma that still stubbornly remains. Randy Davis, who's lived with HIV since 2015, is one of the chefs.
I'm a big believer in stigma being a combination of ignorance and fear. So we educate folks, that alleviates their fear.
A belief he's leaning on as fears swirl the monkeypox outbreak could again lead to discrimination against men who have sex with other men.
And it always seems to be easier to blame a group of folks who are marginalized, that are on the periphery of what is considered traditional society. We just don't want the same thing happening again with this virus and targeting it as a gay disease, because we know it's not.
Monkeypox is transmitted by close contact with an infected person or contaminated object. It can lead to a range of symptoms, but cases in Canada have so far been mild.
We need to recognize that this is not transmitted from and between gay men. This is transmitted between people.
We really have to make sure that we're getting the message out there based on facts, not conjecture.
An important message always and now in the midst of Pride Month.
So, Andy, what do you make of this plethora of news stories coming at us from this past week?
Well, if there's a common thread that runs through all of these stories, it's that you clearly cannot trust the legacy media, which is nothing more than the propaganda arm of the left that doesn't actually care about your well-being and what's good for you, but merely about promoting an agenda, dividing our population, and doing everything they can to seize more power and more control and make life better for their small, tiny group of global elite friends. The fact is that the high priest, Dr. Fauci, who has four shots, who's often seen double masked, he gets COVID, supposedly. He tests positive, which that could mean anything. That could mean a whole host of things, but he tests positive. He has mild symptoms, and much like our great right honorable prime minister, who has his three shots and wears his mask, would say, I've done everything I need to do. I still got COVID, so go out and get the jab. Clearly it works. Clearly the masks work. Everything's working, so just go do it. You know, it doesn't matter that we've already pre-bought millions of doses that we can't just throw away. Just forget all that. It doesn't matter that all the safety data has been covered up or not released and information's been redacted. Just forget all that. It also doesn't matter that even though we tell you you need to lock yourself down in your house for fear of the virus, but if there's a BLM protest, we'll be there shoulder to shoulder with people. Or when you have Pride Comes Before the Fall month, all of a sudden the disease just kind of vanishes. And by the way, whatever happened to Ukraine? Like, the colors changed, right? Like, last month the colors were blue and yellow, and this month, the colors are a perverted version of the rainbow that God has set in the sky. And so we have new colors, new team, new narrative. It's not actually about public health. It's not about the good of the people. It's not about doing what's best for the population. That's a veneer. That's a facade. It is all about pushing a narrative. And we're going to see that even in our stories. It's about pushing a narrative. It's about crafting this idea of what's going on in the world in order that we would remake the world in our image, because ultimately this utopian idea of what the world could be if we just do everything the right way, that's what we're after. And we're not living in the world as it is, because the world as it is tells me that if I'm a mid-30s guy that doesn't have any serious comorbidities and I don't have any issues that would threaten my health, the reality is, by and large, contracting COVID-19 would be like a mild to moderate flu. And so the upheaval of my entire life, that's reality. But the narrative is, be afraid, get 20 shots, wear 5 masks, don't go kiss your grandmother at Thanksgiving. That's going to make the world a better place. There's a real world, and then there's their utopian goal, which is achieved by a fairy tale world, which actually destroys lives, which is the opposite of what they say, which is they're trying to save lives. So that would be my thoughts on the weekend review.
Yeah, and I just think you see an insane amount of hypocrisy. And our public health establishment is willing to suspend public health concerns for their perceived and preferred social programs. That is absolutely evident. You point to BLM. In Canada, you point to the mass shooting of the mosque that Doug Ford presided over in Ontario. And you, now you look at the fact that instead of calling for mandated lockdowns and behavior modification as it pertains to pride parades or Pride Month, what we're seeing is our public health officials are more worried about the social contagion of stigma than they are actually worried about a virus. So it is a lot of just manufactured concern that best plays into their preferred policy outcomes and their desired direction of social engineering, which then, Andrew, kind of leads us into our story one that we really want to cover today, is the fact that the government is all about crafting and controlling media in Canada. And we talked about this at length. Tim and I did an episode previously on Bill C-11 in kind of its origins. And then we talked about how this just, again, is further down the road of some of the policies that were put in place for our government to fund 150 media outlets across our nation, which totally changes the relationship between government and what we should have, which is a free and independent press. How by them funding them, they made the press dependent upon them. And you literally, by definition, can't be independent from something that you're dependent upon.
It's like when I used to work at SportCheck, and you'd have these different vendors that would say, listen, if you push our shoes and sell them, we'll make sure to give you some perks and like gift cards to the Keg and Best Buy. And so what did I do is all of a sudden I'd be, oh, this shoe's the best shoe. And anyone who knew what was going on should look at me and say, does he really think that these shoes are, I'm not going to say what shoes they are because they were actually garbage, but does he really think these shoes are the best shoes? Or is he just pushing the shoes? Now, yes, I've just tipped my hand to a little bit of lack of integrity in my own life. This is many years ago. I'm being sanctified. I'm sure everyone can forgive me, but that's a small picture of when you're on the take and when the perks are coming your way. It is exceedingly difficult, we would say probably impossible, to be actually objective and present the truth in an unbiased manner.
Absolutely. The one who pays the piper calls the tune. That's just the way things work. And what we're seeing is our government is just not through with controlling every jot and tittle of news media in this country, that they have, through Bill C-11, have really flexed the muscle of this Liberal NDP coalition that you talked about in the intro, Andrew. This new muscle by this coalition has been used to squash debates surrounding the bill and really ram through this bill through the House, and we see that after passing first and second reading in the House, Bill C-11 was sent to a committee for review. However, Michael Geist, who's done some really good work as it pertains to Bill C-11, reports on the very undemocratic nature of this committee review and how it was really tailored by the Liberals and the NDP, who were in power over the committee, when he writes this: with roughly 170 proposed amendments by five parties, there was only time for a fraction of the amendments to be reviewed by the actual committee. Instead, once the government imposed deadline arrived at 9 p.m., so they set up this arbitrary deadline, this, as he continues, the committee moved to voting on the remaining proposed amendments without any debate, discussion, questions for department officials, or public disclosure of what was actually being voted on.
Now, I mean, it appears that much of the push to rush the legislation through the House and kind of ram this into being is to do so before the suspension of Parliament at the summer break. That it's not let's deal with it fairly, but let's just hurry up and get it done so we can go on our vacations before we're not allowed to work on this anymore until the fall. It feels like that.
Absolutely. And you really get to see what the Liberals and the NDP actually believe democracy is. It's not rigorous debate, rigorous back and forth in a committee, so we can be totally transparent with the public on what type of legislation we're going to be putting through the House. No. What they mean by democracy is what Marxists means by democracy. They want the dictatorship of the proletariat, and they will rule you according to their ideological bent. That's what democracy means. So they can be opaque. They can ram through legislation that's not debated on as long as it fits their democratic ideal, because true democracy is only that democracy that comes to birth in a socialist dictatorship of the proletariat. That's what they view democracy as. Because this is, as Michael Geist rightly points out, totally violative of democratic norms. Yet they don't care. So it's amazing that these people can get up and talk about democracy. But what we have to understand is they don't mean democracy in the liberal broad sense, right? When we're talking about classical liberal, they've redefined democracy in this Marxist way. And we have to understand that there's tons of meaning packed into these terms that they redefine, which is at the heart of, you know, the critical race theory debate, all those things. And that leads us into what they actually did. And this is coming from True North News. The Liberals, along with the NDP, voted to shut down debate on Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's internet censorship law, Bill C-11. It was passed by 174 votes for and 146 votes against. Conservative MP Blaine Culkin said this in the article: they are censoring the censorship of their own censorship bill. That is what's happening. True North continues. Critics have argued that C-11, which seeks to update the Broadcasting Act so that the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission, CRTC, has jurisdiction over regulating online content, which would be an encroachment of Canadians' right to free expression.
So this is nothing new. We've seen this play in the last few years. We saw this in Ottawa. And what this is really, and Doug Wilson says this, that this is a war over the dictionary. That what they're wanting to do is they're wanting to define the terms and the words, offer redefinitions. They're wanting to deconstruct definitions where you just talked about they don't believe in democracy. They believe in a deconstructed, stripped down all the way to the foundations kind of democracy, which is simply this: most votes wins, right? That's the, that's one of the pillars of actual democracy. A pure democracy is most votes wins.
But that's not tyranny of the majority.
And that's not what democracy is. Democracy includes debate, dissent, the voicing of opinions, right? So democracy is more than just most votes wins, but they want to strip it down. So this play from the left to change the definitions and then move forward with the definitions as they've been changed to further a narrative, this is exactly what they're doing. This is the whole issue with Bill C-4, right? If they can just create an idea of what conversion therapy is, the boogeyman of conversion therapy, which, by the way, no one practices that boogeyman anymore. There's no one in Canada that we know of that's doing electroshock therapy and starvation therapy to try to make people not gay. No one's doing that anymore. But they'll redefine conversion therapy. They'll say it's a boogeyman, and then they'll say, oh, but it's praying for someone or counseling someone. So that's what they're doing here. They want to redefine what discrimination is or censorship or hate speech. And then with this newly armed definition, they can then use it as a club to beat down on either those who would dissent or those who don't agree with the same terms and the same narrative. And this is what they did in Ottawa. I mean, I was in Ottawa a whole bunch of times during the convoy. I was there eating French toast as it was being cooked in the middle of the street. I was there as pizzas were being delivered to homeless people, as stay-at-home moms were there waving their flags and jumping around to dance music with their kids. But what did they call it? An insurrection, a siege, an occupation. So you give new, and you, a siege is not, that was not a siege. So you redefine the words, right? You change, you grab hold of the dictionary. And then what you do is you use these as a weapon against your political enemies and opponents. And that's exactly what they're going to do with this bill.
Yeah. And ultimately this just subjects online content in Canada to regulatory capture. The government gets to stick its tentacles once again. Leviathan sticks its tentacles into another area of Canadians' lives, and this will obviously give them unprecedented control over what's being published online. It is truly unbelievable. And as you make mention, just this gaslighting game that they play, Andrew, is they're doing it to squash misinformation, to make sure we're putting forth content that's in keeping with Canadian values as they define it. And also, they are helping Canadian content providers. But the thing is, these are the same failed CRTC regulations that have been applied to film, TV, and radio. What is the state of Canadian film, TV, and radio under the regulation of CRTC? It's garbage. It's terrible. It's unsustainable. All these government-controlled media platforms are terrible. And the fact of the matter is, Canadians making free content and putting it out on the marketplace to the masses, they're very successful. Men like JJ McCullough. There's tons of YouTube personalities from Canada that didn't need the government's help to make a living making YouTube videos. YouTubers aren't calling for this. In fact, what you're seeing is the mass legacy media who is controlled by our government, sponsored by our government, are the same people who are saying, well, if we're subject to these idiotic regulations, why aren't these content creators on the internet also subject to those restrictions? And it's the same idea when it as it pertained to the stupid licensing that taxi drivers had to go through because of government bureaucracy, and then the implementation of Uber and Lyft and other programs like that, is the taxi cab drivers threw up their hands and they said, we have to go through all these regulations, government, and these people are coming in a true free market solution, and they're providing better services to people for better prices that are safer, and we just can't abide by it.
And it's what it is, you're taking some of our power, They're taking some of our money, and they're also taking away from the in-concert repetitive narrative that's being thrust upon. That's what's going on here. So the whole taxi thing is you have an organization, you have a whole industry that is so regulated. I don't know if they have unions. I'm sure they do. Unions ruin everything. Yeah, unions ruin everything, right?
And Winnipeg is a perfect example.
Right, highly regulated, unionized, and then it's terrible. And then you have some people come along saying, you know what? We're going to actually offer a better product for less money. It'll be enjoyable. You'll have bottles of water and candy in the back. You can choose whatever music you want to listen to. The car is clean and doesn't smell like crap. And it'll be much more enjoyable and quicker and easily accessible. And so, that's our money. That's our bank. That's my bread. He's stealing the bread out of my basket. But for our government, it's that. But what it really is, it's the people. We need to have a monopoly on truth as we declare truth. And more, the internet is supposed to be the public square and the wild, wild west in a good way, where anything goes. Let people say what they're going to say, and then let the viewers determine whether they want to hear it or not, or support it or not. And what our elected officials and our bureaucracies and the legacy media is saying, no, we need a monopoly on truth, and we also need to be the only ones telling you where to find truth, which is to say it's very Orwellian. To say that it is our messaging. It's our messaging. It's our truth. The ministry of truth comes right along.
It's for your
safety. Your safety, your protection. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And it is Orwellian. And the fact of the matter is, like, I mean, we can't even post our videos on YouTube because we just get shut down all the time because we diverge from the narrative on COVID. Like, I've been trying to build that YouTube channel up again, and we just get killed every time.
But
even
I guarantee you, if someone with purple hair did a YouTube video where they said that those Liberty Dispatch guys should be shot, that would not get taken down on YouTube. I guarantee you that wouldn't get taken down on YouTube.
Yeah, because that somehow doesn't violate community standards, but just having a divergent view on COVID does. Like, even the interview Mike did with Eric Metaxas, they didn't even talk about COVID. He just asked, how was the state of New York? And he made a passing comment on the crazy COVID restrictions. That still got us banned. Like, I mean, it's so crazy. But now we have the government regulatory agency getting in with YouTube and Google and these other platforms to actually determine what content via algorithms should be promoted and what. So what we're. Our government is now controlling internet algorithms to promote or de-promote or shadow ban content. That's crazy. Yet this is what's being foisted upon us by our government officials. This has not gone through the Senate. This is not passed yet. We encourage every single person, go over to ARPA. They have an easy mail way to contact your MPs, and you can then speak out against this bill. Because the crazy part is the objections to this bill, because of its implications, are across the political spectrum in Canada. This is not just right. Like, Michael Geist is not a right winger. A lot of the YouTube content creators who are speaking out against this legislation are trying to be silenced by the NDP Liberal Coalition. They're not right wingers. The fact of the matter, this is totally, again, going to change the relationship between the state and the press and the media and individuals' ability to speak freely and express themselves freely. This is huge precedent-setting stuff. And we talked about the power of precedent in our last program. And that's why we need to all together go and beseech our elected officials to kill this bill in the sake of actual self-government, as we tend to generally think of the term democracy. That's my advice as we wrap up this first story.
Yeah, and it moves well into our second story, because while we're talking about the crafting of narratives, the furthering of agendas that are not actually based in truth, but that are based in maybe a cherry picking of certain stats and certain figures, and then redefining things and then saying, here is the truth as we define it. We move into our last story, and I want to say at the top of it that this is a highly contentious, very sensitive kind of topic. This is the one that is very, very divisive. And the reality is, I know that our opponents, our political opponents, and people on the other side of this would say, what business do two straight white Christian men have talking about this? They have no idea what they're about to talk about. They have no idea about the experience of and the actual situations regarding issues of racism and policing. And to that, I'll say, that's nonsense. You can take that neo-Marxist view and you can just run it up to your communist flagpole because that's not how we're going to deal with things.
I just want to specifically, what is the underlying assumption here? And this, we won't go totally in detail. We should maybe do a program on standpoint epistemology or ethnic Gnosticism. That is the view that belies that response. Because you have a certain level of melanin in your skin, you therefore cannot have an opinion on certain subjects. That is the argument. Mm-hmm. And that is saying that people with more melanin in their skin have a different logic. It's like Marxist polylogism all over again. There's multiple logics, and they have this live experience, this folkish knowledge that gives them insight into things that you could never know about because of the color of your skin. It's racist. Mm-hmm. It's race determinism. It's race Gnosticism, and it should be totally rejected by those who actually believe in true human equity and equality before the law.
So we're going to deal with the data, we're going to deal with the figures, and then we're going to try to be objective and factual, and we're actually going to say that at the end of the day, the pushing of this narrative that they want to push will actually have detrimental effects, because what it'll end up doing to young Black men in Toronto and how it's actually going to affect their psyche, their understanding of reality, and their perception is actually not going to be for their good, and it's not going to be for their prosperity, and it's not going to actually make Toronto a better city. It'll make Toronto a worse city, and it'll have serious effects on the population as a whole and actually on the quality of policing. So they're going to say we want to see more quality in policing, but what they're going to find is that if they push this, there's going to be a negative effect on the quality of policing. So here's the story. City News broke this just a few days ago, and basically, according to new race-based data, they have found that Toronto police officers show a disproportionate amount of force against Black people, whether it's the pulling out of weapons and pointing of weapons, whether it's actual arrest rates, and so there's a disparity. That's what it is. There's a disparity, and among Black Torontonians, there's a much higher and a disproportionate amount of force. And I will say at this point that a day after the story broke, the chief of police in Toronto came right out, fell upon his sword, and apologized for the systemic racism in the Toronto police and his part in it or his ignorance of it, and basically made sure that he waved his white guilt flag high and proud so that he showed everyone that he's an ally and that he very much is sorry for what he's done. And so he got his virtue signal game on real strong the day after. So we have a link to both the story and the apology as well in the show notes. So this is what they found. Let's do some numbers here. That there are 949 reportable use of force incidents involving 1,224 members of the public from 86,520 enforcement actions. What they found was that Black people were 2.2 times more likely to be involved in enforcement actions. So twice as likely to be involved in enforcement actions than white people or non-Black people. They saw that Black people were subjected to almost 40% of all use of force incidents in 2020, despite only making up 24.4% of enforcement action. So 24% of the enforcement action was black people, but 40% of the use of force incidents were black people. They saw that East and Southeast Asian people made up 8.5% of these use of force incidents and over 7.1% of the enforcement action population. They found that firearms were pointed in 371 of the incidents, four in which a gun was discharged, resulting in two deaths. Black people made up 149 of these incidents. White people were the only group where higher use of force decreased in these incidents. For example, white people made up 54% of physical or other types of force, the lowest category. Only 26% of incidents involved a firearm being drawn. In comparison, black people accounted for 28% who experienced physical force, but 40% of the incidents involved the use of a firearm. East and Southeast Asian people were also more likely to experience higher use of force than white people. So this is what they found, the numbers, that you have black people that have a high or a disproportionate amount of use of force, whether it's firearms pulled on them, whether it's these incidents and these negative interactions with police officers. What we also see, just want to throw these numbers out because we need to understand the statistics and the facts. We need to know what's going on here. 75%, this is from CBC, 75% of Canadian homicide victims are racialized Ontarians, right? So this is non-white people. 44% identified as African, Caribbean, or black. Black Torontonians are four times more likely to be charged with the crime, and one in five young black men in Ontario have been incarcerated compared to one in 70 white men. So the numbers we have, again, are the studies, their studies have found that black people are disproportionately represented in having force used against them by police officers, in weapons being drawn, as being the victims of homicide, and in terms of incarceration rates. So there's a disparity. And Matt, clearly, we know that wherever there's a disparity, it almost always and must definitely be because of discrimination and bigotry and systemic injustice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, or so we're told. It's amazing, you know, I'm not a stats guru, but the adage that everybody's aware of when it pertains to statistics is correlation doesn't equal causation. Yet when you're a neo-Marxist and you have determined the causation of old discrepancies in society, no matter what, is due to this bourgeois oppressing of the proletariat that you then can apply to any scenario. So in this case, it's crime statistics, that what we're seeing is the powerful hegemonic group is oppressing this minority of racialized individuals. I just want to pause on the term racialized used in the CBC article. They just use it, racialized, marginalized. You'll just see it, whatever. There's a huge theory behind that. Essentially, it's a Marxist critique of society built on critical race theory, again, that says white people created the paradigm of race to racialize other races of darker skin so they can maintain power. That is the conspiracy theory that is embedded in the terms marginalized and racialized communities. So I just want people to understand that. Now, we as Christians would understand that we are all of one race, that all the various differences in the color of our epidermis is just natural genetic differences that pertain to the amount of melanin in people's skin, that our original parents that we're all descended from would have had a middle ground skin color that within it had all the different variations of of skin color as possible, and that we are of one race, meaning we're all human beings made in the Imago Dei, image bearers of God, all equal before the law of God, all worthy of equality and respect before the law. We hate partiality. That's a grave sin. That's a grave injustice, and it needs to be dealt with in society as it pertains to social economic status or even to skin color. These are all things that we maintain. Race, as we understand it, is not a biblical concept, and we need to get rid of it rather than using race essentialism to destroy the current hegemony, so then you can install a new hegemony, which is again this socialistic, communistic, collectivistic dictatorship of the proletariat, which Ibram X. Kennedy does call for. He calls for because of these discrepancies, because he says these discrepancies are proof of systemic racism, which is structural determinism, Marx, it's all there. He says the only way that we're going to deal with this is because of past discrimination leads to present discrimination, we need future discrimination, and that's by installing this literal dictatorship of the proletariat, which is a dictatorship of the anti-racists.
And Kennedy purports that oppression is fine as long as you're oppressing the oppressor. Then it's acceptable.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so when we're using the terminology anti-racist, obviously we're against racism. We hate racism. It's partiality. We've already talked about that. But the term anti-racism, this is another theme that we're getting at, has been hijacked by the Marxists, by the neo-Marxists, to mean actively, in a Marxist fashion, having a critical consciousness and tearing down the prevailing white hegemony to install this new dictatorship of the anti-racists. That's everything mashed up together. What they're trying to do here by pointing out these discrepancies is trying to get to this praxis. It's trying to get to this ultimate solution that they want put in place. And statistics be damned, they're just going to use it for their ends regardless. But so some of the actual facts on the ground.
So the reality is we can't. So let's assume, right, like I haven't done a deep dive into this study, into these findings. I haven't. I mean, it only came out just a few days ago. But let's just say that the numbers are correct, that these disparities do exist, that there is a disproportionately high amount of force, violence, incarceration among Black Torontonians than non-Black. Fine. Let's say the disparity exists. The question we have to ask is why. And why does the disparity exist? And I think there are different levels to this. One we're going to answer today, and one that we really can't answer today that might be the topic of a good discussion in the future. In one sense, why the disparity exists because of what we actually see happening on the ground in Toronto, which we're going to talk about. And then the higher level, the meta level of why they exist, is pointing to broader societal problems and trends and issues of culture and worldview and ideology that are why we see these things. But we can't deal with that second one. Let's deal with the first one. So in response to the disparity, I've done a little bit of digging, and I found it curious that even though they talk about the high rates of incarceration or the high rates of use of force from the police, the study and the articles don't say anything about actual crime rates or the rate at which Black Torontonians commit crime and actually engage in these activities. That's basically, it's crickets on that. So I did a little bit of research here, and the truth is I've been studying and looking into this for a while. And so I came across a fairly in-depth study from 2016. So it's not that long ago, right? 6 years is not like the whole world was different and crime was flipped up on its head. Now it's the reciprocal of it. So what we found regarding homicide rates for young Black men in Toronto in 2016 was this, that Black people make up 10% of the population. Black men make up about half of that, right? If you do 50-50. So Black men make up 5% of the population, and yet they commit 36% of all homicides. So 5% of the population commits 36% of all homicides. The murder rate is more than quadruple that of non-black people. So black people murder, the murder rate committed by black people is more than quadruple of non-blacks. Again, as a percentage of the population. Statistically, about 90 to 95% of all violent crimes committed against black people are by other black people. So the majority of the murder and the death we see are at the hands of other black people. And so this is the question. When a certain segment of the population is committing violent crime at five times the rate of another segment of the population, doesn't it make a little bit of sense, at least, that one, they're going to have a disproportionate number of interactions with the police? Obviously, that if you're committing a disproportionate amount of crime, a much higher, right? If they're two times more likely to be the object of a use of force incident, and yet they're five times more likely to be engaged in violent crime. So obviously, with the disproportionate amount of crime, you're going to see a disproportionate amount of police engagement. That just makes sense, right? Like, I have three children. Of my three children, there's not discrimination I show against the one who is particularly disobedient or the one who pushes the boundaries a little bit more. If there's one child that's on the receiving end of disciplinary action, no one on the outside could say, wow, you must hate that child. It's discrimination. It's oppression that this child gets grounded more than the other. No, it's because this child happens to be the one that pushes the boundaries and is much more defiant. That's just logical. So the same principle applies here. So that's the first thing we would expect to see. The second thing is this, that the police are more likely to be extra cautious and more likely to use force. This is just, if you're a police officer and you survey the population, you know you're in a certain area and there are a certain number of people and you know that a certain segment, a subset of that population is going to commit a significantly amount of disproportionately higher crime than another, then you're going to be a little more cautious. You're going to be a little more careful. You're going to engage a little bit differently. And what I want to do is I want to just touch on a few other statistics that were also totally silent in the study and in some of the research. And let's assume, and I think this is a safe assumption, that Toronto is a lot like other large cities in the U.S., right? So similar size cities in the U.S., very multi-ethnic, metropolitan, big cities. And we could probably assume, or I'm sure a lot of people would say, we're not nearly as racist as they are down there, right? I mean, when it comes to black people, people would say, oh, the States is way more racist than us. And I don't particularly agree with that, but let's just go with that narrative, that they're way more racist than we are. And if Toronto's similar to these bigger cities, then here's what we see. Statistics show, so this is clear, this is a couple years ago this came out. Statistics show clearly that black officers, not white officers, are more likely to shoot black suspects, and white officers are more likely to be hesitant. So even if there's a disproportionate amount of use of force against black people, chances are at least half, if not more than half, is at the hands of black police officers. White police officers are more than twice as likely to get shot by a black suspect than a black suspect is to be shot by a white officer. That's a fact. Black men in Toronto commit a very high disproportionate amount of violent crime. So of course they would have more serious police interactions. And this is what happens when the critical social justice movement infects thinking. It all becomes about narrative. It becomes the furthering of a particular agenda and not actually looking at the issue from all sides, not trying to be objective, not asking questions like why the disparity, but simply assuming the disparity must be because of discrimination, it must be because of oppression, it must be because of systemic injustice that is baked right into all of our institutions. But the narrative is bunk. The narrative is nonsense. We know that what they want us to think is that white police officers are just walking around the streets of Toronto, beating up on black people and pulling their guns out on them and arresting them just for fun at much higher rates because they're a bunch of racist white cops. But that's not what's going on. That's not what's going on at all. And we take a closer look at it. We see that there are other things at play. There are facts, there are realities that don't fit that narrative. And what I'll say to kind of to wrap this up, just my thoughts on this right now, and I'm going to let you take a swing at this because, I mean, you don't have really anything to say about critical theory and neo-Marxism as it pertains to, I know that you kind of, you don't really have an opinion on that, but I'll give you an opportunity to have an opinion. But what I'll say about all of this is this, and this also is highly contentious. The left, these neo-Marxists, they don't actually care about the health, the well-being, and the prosperity of Black people in the same way that they don't care about that with regards to women, and even with regards to other marginalized, oppressed groups, whether that's LGBT people, whether that's Native Canadians, right, whether that's First Nations people, they actually don't care. They use them as pawns to further an agenda, and then they'll discard them when it doesn't fit. Because the nonsense about residential schools, which was all the rage last year leading up to Canada Day, in order to make us ashamed of being Canadian to shut down Canada Day, number one, not a single grave has been exhumed. And number two, that's all fallen in the background because we needed to push other narratives, like the COVID narrative or the Ukraine narrative. They don't actually care about these people. And I know they don't care about these groups of people that they recognized. Because if all these people putting out these studies were going to talk about disproportionate amount of violence done against Black people, how about abortions? How about baby murders? How about the fact that in New York City, more than half of all Black babies are murdered before they make a natural exit from their mother's womb? How about the fact that the last 40 years, there is a significant block of the Black population missing because of the encouragement to murder Black babies when they're inside their mother's wombs? Why don't we hear anything about that? You want to talk about disproportionate crime and violence against Black people? What about that? Silence, nothing, crickets. Why? And this is what our viewers need to understand, that it's all about narrative. They don't actually care. They don't actually care about the health and the prosperity and the well-being of Black people. They only care about using them to further their neo-Marxist agenda, to recreate the world in their image, to have this utopian reality come into play, and to tear down Western civilization and hollow it in, hollow it from the inside out. That is all they care about, period.
And they are, the neo-Marxists are very open about that, that these groups of the coalition of the oppressed that will form this new hegemony of the proletariat are a tool at dislodging or deconstructing the current white Christian bourgeois hegemony in society. They are tools in a game of deconstruction, and that is basically what they amount to. And all that they believe, because there's so much postmodernism wrapped up in this worldview as well, is all you have in society is a power struggle. There is no objective truth. There is no objective reality. All you have, therefore, is a power struggle. And therefore, power is a zero-sum game, and it needs to be taken from others and given to us so then we can foist upon you our ideological and utopian vision of the world. And that is essentially what we're dealing with when we're dealing with this situation. Now, I have two stories that I want to just quickly kind of put in because I think they'll marry well to what you talked about. But people should stay tuned this Saturday. Mike is on his open mic program, is doing a conversation with Brian Giesbrecht about the residential schools and a lot of what you just said. But here in Winnipeg, our biggest celebration of Canada Day happens at the Forks downtown. And we are now suspending normal celebrations of Canada Day because it's a colonial holiday and a colonial celebration. And in light of what happened last year with the discovery of these bodies that were never actually found, never brought up. I mean, the narrative was spun. The narrative is, as Brian, you should tune in, will tell you, is old bunk. Nevertheless, because of this bunk narrative, we're not having Canada Day celebrations at the Forks. Fine. As I'm driving downtown Winnipeg, too, this ties into the police story. No police on stolen ground. Our poster is posted all over Winnipeg. Okay? This is critical race theory. This is, let's just call it what it is, race Marxism in our country, in our nation, and it exists for one purpose, to utterly dismantle Western civilization. Guys, we're in a war right now. It's a spiritual battle, and it's a battle of ideas, and we need to wake up to that fact. The Marxists are in the gates, and they're tearing down the walls. And we need to wake up to that fact, call it what it is, and stop kowtowing to these narratives. Stop tippy-toeing around them, but understand the antithesis and fight back against this Marxism, because this Marxism is identity Marxism as it pertains to the LGBTQI ampersand it whatever movement. It is Marxism in education, educational Marxism, where you turn literacy into Marxism. You can go through the list of what's going on, and what you're seeing is neo-Marxists long march through the institutions of our culture and our society coming to fruition. It is what the Fabian Society of Marxists long hoped about, is that when we wait long, but when we strike hard. And that's why their symbol was a turtle with a raised fist. And that is a society of British Marxists that has infiltrated our society. And you have all sorts of other Marxist groups have followed in their stead. And we really, really need to wake up to that, because all these stories are actually just belying the fact that this is a virus that has infected our society that we need to root out and identify. We need to identify it and then get rid of it through vigorous debate, through actual real democratic process. That is our goal, so that we can return to a healthy society that's rooted out this dangerous cancer.
And what we need to remember is that the answer, the response to the way to deal with this cultural behemoth, right? This neo-Marxist critical social justice monster that desires to create a utopia as it defines and remake the world in its image, and in the process, completely dismantle all things Western civilization. What they're really after is not Western civilization for the sake of Western civilization. What they're after are the pillars upon which Western civilization stands, and that is the truth of a biblical Christian worldview. That's what they're after, right? That's what they're attacking. And so the answer to it, or the solution, is for Christians not to say, well, I better disengage. That's a political thing. Why do I even bother getting involved in these things? I just got to preach on Sunday morning and then share the gospel and do potlucks with casseroles and then have groups and Awanus and our kids ministry. We just got to worry about us. Listen, that is nonsense. That's what got us into this mess. What got us into this mess, as Schaefer would rightly say, is that when the culture began to free itself from the good godly restraints that brought order to our culture, the church that was supposed to be a prophetic voice and said, no, listen, I don't care what you say about God or the Bible. Murder is wrong. Theft is wrong. Discrimination is wrong. True discrimination is wrong, and oppression is wrong. And the church was supposed to step in and say, no, you can't just marry and divorce whoever you want. You can't just redefine marriage. You can't just say it's a clump of cells so you can kill it. You can't just steal money from people and give it to other people because you're trying to flatten out the economy so that everyone's the same. The church was supposed to be a prophetic voice and say, no, too far, government. you're overreaching, you're pushing your hand. And so what we need to do is we need to attack, in the spiritual and figurative sense, this ideology with truth. We need to bring the truth of the scriptures to bear. We need to bring the full weight of our biblical worldview to bear. And we need to attack these lies. We need to come against the narrative. And we need to say, no, here is the truth. The truth is that all people have been made in God's image, and all people are worthy of dignity and value and equal before God as being people that bear his image. But this is God's world. And because it's his world, he gets to define how things are. He gets to define marriage, and he gets to define sexuality. He gets to define how the government is supposed to operate. He gets to define what families look like. He gets to define what education should look like, because it's his world. And we cannot be afraid to engage that way. Vodi Bakum has said before that if you're a knight and you're about to engage in a battle, and then someone says, well, I don't believe in your sword, you don't just then drop it to the ground and say, well, if you don't believe in my sword, I guess I'm not going to use it. No, you take that sword, you strike them down. It doesn't matter whether they believe in it or not. It is a real sword that has real power. And the word of God and the truth of God is a real sword with real power. And so viewers, if you're watching this, you're probably on the same page with us, but maybe you're wrestling. Maybe you have friends and family who are wrestling as well, that they say, but how do I engage? What do I do? That's not my place. No, it is your place. It is your place to engage, to arm yourself with the truth, to learn, to research, to study, and to engage and push back against these lies and this narrative which only hurt people. This isn't for the good of people. This is detrimental to our society. And only the truth of God's word brings life and flourishing and prosperity.
And it sets people free.
Right.
I want to make one comment on what you just said, because I think it'll pertain to those two groups of people that you've talked about. If you're a Christian, why do we fight Marxism? Because it's alien faith. It's an apostate faith. It's an idolatrous faith. It's a Hegelian religion. It's a new religion that supplants the claims of Christ with an immanentized eschaton and an anthropocentric, man-centered view of life and everything, okay? So that's why Christians would fight against it, because we're told, we're commanded to tear down every stronghold that erects itself against Christ. Why should non-Christians fight it? Because it's a Hegelian religion that seeks to totally control every aspect of human society. So come alongside us Christians who understand that there's a separation of church, the sphere of the church, and the sphere of the state, and uphold that distinction as the Bible reveals to us. We let's stand out up against these totalitarians who seek to control every aspect of human society based off of their ideological and religious whims, okay? That's why both of these groups, that's where, no matter where you're coming at, let's get together to fight this religion, because it seeks to put under its boot everyone that does not eventually have a critical consciousness. And that pertains to all non-neo-Marxists, okay? So that's why we need to fight against this. That's why if you're freedom loving, you need to fight against this, okay? And that's why we exist as a program. LibertyCoalitionCanada.com. You can check out all that we have going on there. Check out our Rumble channel at Liberty Coalition Canada. Also, we're on the Fight Laugh Feast Network, which you can get an app so you can get our programs on demand. We recommend you do that. And if you want to be like our advertisers, RockLink Investment, partner with us by advertising with us as well, and you can see your ads on our programs as well. Thank you so much, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the program. We hope it clarified not only the news, but also what we're seeing going on in our culture for you. And until next time, Galatians 5:1.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.